League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
People say I am the best boss.
You can find us on Twitter at SB Nation Radio and call in at 1-800-777-2907. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
And the stars have aligned again. Carla Dawson, the Monday Night Delight has returned.
I ignored that pink slip that was on the door and just barreled on through.
She came storming in and she beat up Joel Blank and he's been thrown out.
Joel was too good. I'm so glad you let me back in the building.
Joel was awesome.
He's done this before, too.
Well, Joel Blank, he's an on-fire show host for the local station we own in town, KFNC Houston. But it was really fun to talk to him about all things NBA, and he's got a great perspective on the NBA.
Wow, he really does.
Very bullish on the Rockets. I mean, what's happening with the Rockets is exciting with Chris Paul and James Harden. They've meshed in that backcourt, and right now they may be the best team or playing the best basketball in the NBA thus far.
I loved his observation of, the Rockets lost Chris Paul for, I don't know how many games, 14 games
That's
or something
right.
crazy after the first opening night. That is not a negative, but instead a positive, because here's Chris Paul getting to sit next to Mike D'Antoni, Rockets head coach, and learn the system, see how he talks to the guys, see how he can fit in. I mean, that's a huge bonus, something I hadn't thought of before.
And we got a great chance in hour one to visit with Lenny Wilkins, the NBA Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I was a bit jealous, I have to tell you that.
Well, he's very excited, Wilkins, his coach is, about the possibility of basketball returning to Seattle.
Right.
As that is now a possibility. And then we had Tom Zenner in. Tom Zenner, of course, a writer of many books, but most notably for the city of Houston, he's written a book commemorating the outstanding World Series season. And in fact, if you'd like to go and get this book, it's going to be a great holiday gift. You can go to winnersbooks.com. And when you do, you can find the Astros books there and be sure to enter promo code Houston17, Houston17, and that'll get you 10% off the price. But it tells
a
story.
It is a beautiful book. I'm looking right at the cover. It's a great, you want to put that on your coffee table.
Beautiful.
Bragging rights.
Beautiful book and chapters that include a whole chapter on Justin Verlander and what he meant to the team. They're all the elements, all the stories.
Is the engagement in there?
You know what? I have not read that part of the book. The romance at the end?
Absolutely.
Well, we are on fire now that you are back. We appreciate your coming in the second hour. You've come from a school board meeting.
Yes,
it's sort of Wonder Woman does all things.
So they say. I'm just glad you all let me back in the building. And
so,
thank you to Joel Blank. That was great for him.
Yes, thanks to Joel for filling in. When we come back, we're going to get your thoughts on the college football playoffs. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Always good to be doing a game during Monday Night Football, and we have a man on the ground in Cincinnati. Let's get the update from our stringer there.
Hey, good start here in Cincinnati for the home troops. Bengals lead this game 10-0. The big storyline, both teams losing a key defender early on. We'll start with the Bengals. Adam Jones, he intercepted Ben Roethlisberger on the first drive of the game, but he suffered a groin injury, and he's in street clothes, done for the game. A couple minutes later, the Steelers linebacker Ryan Shazier had led with the helmet. Looked like he suffered a pretty bad injury. In fact, he did not move for several minutes, didn't move his legs. He did reach for his back immediately after it happened. They carted him off. The update we got from P.J. Combs from the Bengals is they're looking at a back injury. They're going to keep us updated throughout the night on his status, but obviously he's out for the game. But the Bengals, with a 10-0 lead, A.J. Green has the touchdown, and the Bengals just have the ball back. 13:29 to go in the first half from Paul Brown Stadium.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the update with the Bengals leading 10-0. And yes, Ryan Shazier's hit was very ominous. Now, it's heartening that they've got him off and they think it's a back injury, but when he hit, it was head first, and he hit the ground immediately. It was spooky.
You know, this is part of my Catholic guilt of loving football so much. I mean, this is part of the game. And as you said, you know, I'd asked you when I came in, was it an illegal hit? But you said, no, this was just simply a helmet to a body, just a regular tackle. And it's just a devastating part of this game. So our prayers go out to Ryan Shazier, and hopefully some better news than what it looked like. Wow.
Well, let's spend this segment on college football. It has been an extraordinary weekend, all the college championship games, and then finally the decision this time, it was that Alabama would be the fourth team in the Final Four. Did that surprise you? Are you happy with Alabama?
You asked me two questions, so I'm going to answer them both.
Yes.
No, it did not surprise me. No, I'm not happy. It's Alabama.
Right.
You know, it's not that they – I'm not saying that they don't deserve it, but I'm not happy with that pick.
Yep.
How do you feel about
that? No, actually, I wouldn't either. I've said – I've got Alabama fatigue. I would have loved to have seen another team in there. I get the point, and Tom Zenner in the first hour made this great point that he said the minute that the committee starts to allow two-loss teams in, that opened up a big problem because there are always a bunch of two-loss teams. Mm-hmm. And then how do you distinguish among two-loss teams?
Yeah, then you start looking at how badly were those losses and this and that. I think it has a negative effect. You know, again, we're 4 years into the college football playoffs, and pretty much one, two, and three were set, with Clemson, number one, as the ACC champion, Oklahoma, number two, as the Big 12 champion, number three, Georgia, the SEC champion. So it was this number four spot that has caused so much conversation.
And in one sense, it makes life easy. There's only one problem this year.
Right. Well, that's very true. But it was between, so they say, Alabama, Ohio State, who is the Big Ten champion, and USC was thrown into the conversation as the Big Pac-12 champion.
Sure.
But let truth be told, I am a Trojan, there was not a lot of conversation about USC because they are a two-loss team. And that's unfortunate because, well, so is Ohio State. Because really, I have seen how they do on these selection shows, and they'll show numbers, and it's a blind test. They'll cover up the names. And everyone picked the same set of numbers, and it belonged to USC. And the strongest thing about them were the number of ranked teams that they beat, and their strength of schedule was 15 and 20 spots ahead of both Ohio State and Alabama, but Alabama being the last of those three. So that was really tough for me. I think it was I don't know that it was fair, but I know that people know that Alabama's going to be great, and they've got two Big Ten shutouts in 2015 and 2016. They don't want to do that again. But I look at that and say you've got five Power Five conferences. Three are represented.
Well, and this was not a great year for the SEC. So to get two teams into the Final Four seems like a stretch.
Right. They're heavy at the top and underwhelming all the way down. You look at Alabama, they have not beat a team ranked higher than 15.
Hmm.
And in my, and I know I've talked about this before, but what I don't love about what Alabama did is, and what the committee, well, let me say, Alabama did whatever they're going to do. And playing a Mercer in week 13 is insanity. But you know what? It worked for them. They had a 56-0 beatdown on them, and it's just another win. But what I think that the committee, what they did was they set a bad precedent, and they sent a bad message. And the precedent is that, hey, you can slide into the playoffs and do absolutely nothing on conference champion weekend. Just sit there. You don't even have to go. In fact, for Auburn, it would have been better for them not to go.
Sure.
I mean, they would have had a better chance to get in. So that's my bad precedent. You know, Alabama didn't win their division, and they didn't record a W over a top 15 team. And here they are in the college football playoffs. The message that I feel like the committee sent is that, hey, it's not the wins and losses. It's your team's reputation, not the play on the field, that matters. I mean, I guess in a way it is your wins and losses because they only had one. But they have not looked great. And it doesn't matter.
So they haven't looked great. Actually, I agree with everything you've said. But
you don't
I
have to.
But I also, well, here's what I, well, a little nuance in this is that when you stack rank the four right now and you had to predict who's going to win it all, I might put Alabama number two. Though I don't really like them being included in the top four, I sort of look at this and I say, well, Clemson would be my most likely to win it all. Probably Alabama the second. Now, they're going to play each other, so one of them will eliminate the other. And then I might go Oklahoma and Georgia four. So in the one sense, I don't like there being them. I don't like there being there. And I actually would say, well, there are reasons and better cases to make for other teams. But I still think they may be the second best team in the country.
They've got, you know, the Patriot effect, basically.
Yes. It's hard to get out of that.
It is so hard. They have been so dominant for so long. They're a well-coached team. It's an incredible program. And I would say that Nick Saban and Urban Meyer are the top two coaches in all of college football. And I think college football has a lot of great coaches. But you're right. It's more of, and this is exactly what I think the committee looked at. They said, you know what? The resume is lacking. If you look at their strength of schedule and who they played and when they lost, which was so late in the season, when you should be really fine-tuned, but the brand prevailed. And that's exactly what happens with the Patriots. Mm. You know, you have worked up that kind of cachet. But what I think is tough, like I look at the two outsiders looking in, which is Urban Meyer and the Ohio State Buckeyes, Clay Helton and the USC Trojans on the outside looking in. And what do I do if I'm Urban Meyer and I'm Clay Helton? Well, if I'm Urban Meyer, I say, forget scheduling Oklahoma in week two. I'm going to put Mercer in week two.
Yep.
And if I'm Clay Helton, I have to look at what really killed USC was that 30-point beatdown by Notre Dame.
Right.
At South Bend, you know, at a night game, all of that. They don't have to play Notre Dame.
Yeah, if Ohio State had not played Oklahoma, Ohio State would be in the CFP. USC, I guess you'd say the same point about Notre Dame.
I would absolutely say it because their other loss was to a Washington State team by 3 points Friday night in Pullman with three of their offensive line starters out. So I think they got a pass a bit like Clemson did with the Syracuse game, losing their quarterback, Kelly Bryant. But for Ohio State, they kind of have a double whammy in that, yes, they lost to Oklahoma in week two, but that 30-point beatdown by Iowa, that's really, I think, what killed them in the finals. But as coaches of those programs, I'm looking at, well, we need to schedule Mercer and UNLV and Sam Houston State. You know, it's just, I think it discourages programs to want to up their strength of schedule.
Duly noted, that is the final word from the Gloss, who's come in heavy against Alabama.
I know, but I'm telling you, I wouldn't be surprised if they surprised everybody. They were not going to surprise anybody. We know that they're a good football team, and you would never count them out. This is not the Alabama we've seen of old, but that's all they need is my words for motivation, so I'm going to stop right now.
All right. That's the word on college football. When we come back, we're going to take a close look at the big headlines of the NFL. We might even get Chris Tubbs to weigh in on his on-fire Vikings, led by Case Keenum. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gow and Carla Dawson.
So, big week in New York. They sit down Eli Manning. He misses one game. Then they clean house. McAdoo is gone. Jerry Reese, the general manager, is gone. And Eli is back. So it's all turned around. Boy, it couldn't have gone any worse. This whole season just been a debacle. Everything sort of unraveled very quickly for them.
Were you surprised both of them got let go today?
Not really. I felt like, I just feel like that team needs a fresh start. And they're going to need a fresh start at quarterback. I mean, by the time they get everything righted, Manning's career will be done. I think if they could, they should trade him for some kind of return. And then they draft their new starter, a Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen or somebody in the top five picks.
I don't want Sam coming out. Stop saying that.
Well, I know it, but you know the thing about Sam Darnold is he played so well in the Pac-12 championship game. If there's any question whether he was on the fence, should he come out, should he not, is he ready? The way he played and the way he's going to show in the NFL Combine with his physical traits, Darnold will be a top five pick. And he may be playing for the Giants.
And the amount of teams that need quarterbacks. But this is interesting for New York Giants. Do you know this is the first time in 40 years they fired their head coach mid-year? 40 years.
Wow.
Which is really, really says something about the staying power in that organization and how badly it's gone off the rails under Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo. And I wonder, and I'd love your opinion on this, David, do you think Ben McAdoo, it was his idea and his strategy to bench Eli Manning, you know, 210 consecutive starts? And to me, you know what you have in Geno Smith. He's been in the league long enough, we know. why aren't you putting Davis Webb in? I mean, is this a Jerry Reese decision, do you think? And Ben McAdoo is the fall guy, or?
See, if I'm Ben McAdoo, my whole ambition is to win games. It preserves my job. And I don't think under any moment would you ever think that Geno Smith is going to make you more likely to win than Eli Manning. So it doesn't feel like a McAdoo decision. It feels like maybe a Jerry Reese. Maybe you could either argue they were tanking, or you could argue that they wanted to preserve Manning for the future and not let him get beat up behind a bad offensive line. But to your point, they're not even starting Davis Webb, who could give them a chance to see what they've got in the young rookie.
That's exactly the point. At this point, if you're benching Manning, you need to take a look at what you've got in your treasure chest.
Yep.
And maybe it's nothing, and you need to do that going ahead of the draft. Because at this point, in McAdoo's 2 years, he's 13-15 overall, 2-10 this season, and he has the second worst offense in the NFL.
Well, he's done, and they need that fresh start. The thing that, from the Manning perspective, what is interesting, he had that great consecutive game streak, about 210 games. He played so well for so long. They bench him.
Two-time Super Bowl champion. Hello.
So in a pre-meeting, it was sort of interesting. We were talking about a fun trivia question. Who is the last quarterback to start for the Giants prior to Eli Manning?
And you have to, 2004 you have to go back
you
to,
you have to go all the way back to 2004, and it's Kurt Warner. And think how long ago that is.
Wow.
I mean, this has been an incredible run, and he'll be back starting next week. But he lost the streak on this fluke, this little lightning bolt that came out
really
of Giant management somewhere.
Knee-jerk reaction. Because you look at the Giants, they have failed to score 30 points in any of the games that McAdoo has coached last year and this year. Okay, that should be a red flag. And to me, I look at McAdoo's tenure and I think, okay, what is he going to be known for? Anything good?
Yes.
Well, okay, good. What?
The his hair?
Yes. I knew it.
His hairstyle.
I mean, come on,
look. He's
sunglasses.
Got
he's got some good shades.
And the mustache.
But
the
yikes.
Ladies love it.
Not all the ladies.
No.
But he's going to be known for the guy who has no problem throwing Eli Manning under the bus. He did it last season, too. He's going to be known as the guy who broke Eli Manning's 210 consecutive start streak. You know, he's going to be known as the coach who didn't communicate well with his team nor the public. Giants fans are tough.
Yep.
They didn't like that. You know, an incompetent offense and no run game. That's quite a legacy.
But I
blame Reese for the no run game. You have to draft running backs. Mm-hmm. You have to draft for that.
Or an O-line. They didn't. I mean, they just didn't have it up front.
Right. So tough time for the Giants. But put
time.
In Webb and see what he looks like, at least at some point. Let Eli keep his starts. But take a look at Davis Webb. See what you got.
Well, we will see. Now, this is the moment. We ought to have love story music playing in the background.
Sure. I know what's
Chris
coming.
Chris Tubbs is in love. He is the world's biggest Vikings fan. When they play, he lights a candle. The music plays. And the Vikings with actually a very big win. I thought it was a signature win. I did not think they would beat the Falcons. Congrats to your Vikings, 14-9 over Atlanta.
The only thing that's missing is like some roses and some silk sheets and some Cavassier.
Next week. Give me some time, Chris. You know, they're going to keep winning.
It's a little bit too lovely here.
You know, it really is amazing kind of how this team has continued to play at this level. They really hadn't been tested. They had New Orleans in week one, but that's when they were still, when the Saints were trying to figure out how to force feed Adrian Peterson carries.
Yep.
You notice once you got Adrian Peterson out of the picture, and New Orleans was 0-2 to begin the season, just to pivot for a little bit, but the Saints were 0-2. They lost to Minnesota and New England.
Mm.
So those are completely excusable losses. Mm. You ship off Adrian Peterson to Arizona, boom, all of a sudden you got Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram, but the Vikings got them already, and the Vikings have beaten the Rams. At home, it doesn't matter. A win is still a win when you're talking about the head-to-head. They've beaten the Falcons. They've beaten the Lions. Now they're going to have a chance at the Panthers. I mean, if you're looking at the tiebreaker scenario right now, Minnesota's doing everything that they have to do, and they're doing it with defense. They're doing it with offense.
It's a clinic on complimentary football. They are giving a clinic.
And the thing about the Vikings defense, it's not sexy. They're not ball hawking. I mean, they're not. It's not a big play defense. It's not, you know, we're going to get 8 or 9 sacks like Saxonville. You look up and you realize that it's third down and this team hasn't moved the ball. Okay, they're going to be tough to score on. And I was talking to a couple people last night. Vikings, the thing about Minnesota that they have going in their favor, and I'm still very nervous about this team. Don't get me wrong. Any Vikings
fan. But any good fan should be nervous.
Yeah, we're waiting for the fall to happen, the inevitable implosion. But they don't need to get into shootouts anymore. The question for me is, it's like, oh, well, who are the Vikings going to outscore? No. Let's flip it around. Who's going to score in that second best scoring defense, only like a half a point behind Jacksonville? Because Minnesota's the second best scoring defense in the NFL. You don't need to put up 30 plus points when you're only giving up 17 a game.
No, you're so right. And we can't say enough about Case Keenum, who he's a product of several things. A quality system in place in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. A really sharp offensive coordinator. I love him and what he's doing. Good weapons all around him. And a really strong D. What more can you ask for? Who can't succeed in that system?
No, and Mike Zimmer is already committed to Case Keenum against Carolina. Everybody, unless you're absolutely oblivious to it, we all know that this is Case Keenum for the rest of the season. It has to be Case Keenum. Anything else is a grave judgment and error unless there's a significant injury. This has got to be Case Keenum's team. I don't think there's any question about it. And to get into what Joel was saying, Green Bay is also interesting because they're 6-6.
Mm-hmm.
You beat Cleveland, you possibly get Carolina. All of a sudden, you got Green Bay on the fringe at 8-6. Week 15 with a very upset.
Rodgers coming back.
With a very upset Aaron Rodgers at Lambeau Field. All of a sudden, you've got a dangerous Green Bay team with Aaron Rodgers coming back, and that could create havoc in the NFC even more so.
Right, because Green Bay being 1-5 without Rodgers, but next week if they beat Cleveland, they are 7-6, and that's a nice place to be sitting when Aaron Rodgers returns.
Absolutely.
Can't believe he's coming back.
Absolutely.
That's impressive.
You got to get through Carolina, though, because there's no room for error for the Packers.
No, there's no room for error, but you don't know. Carolina, to me, lacks consistency. That's what I've kind of seen from week to week. I want to be excited about them, but wow, you can't count on them.
Yeah, it's looking ahead, but if I were a Vikings fan, I would be watching those Saints. I just think they're really impressive right now. The running game is clicking, and Drew Brees has never had a running attack like he's got with those two backs right now.
Oh, they are ridiculous.
Alvin Kamara, I mean, he's speed, and then Ingram is just a bull. It's a really great 1-2 punch.
And they're having fun.
Yeah. And it might be the best 1-2 punch that, because normally you have like a flash and dash, like a thunder and lightning. These guys are virtually interchangeable. And that's the scary thing for defenses. And if Sean Payton ever puts these two guys on the field at the same time, and I mean, they can play. If Minnesota gets home field and New Orleans has to go, you know, it doesn't matter because it's turf. These guys can run just as fast on Minnesota's turf as they can in New Orleans. So to me, I don't think it's really that big of a New Orleans scares me. In the NFC, if there's one team that I'm scared of, it's definitely New Orleans.
Well, I think you're right, because you look at Kamara and Ingram, they combined for 200 yards from scrimmage for the fifth game in a row yesterday. And Drew Brees, 75% of his passes are inside of 10 yards.
Hmm.
But he can afford to do that because he's got this incredible tandem in the running back situation. It's really impressive. So they're now in sole possession of first place in their division. So it's going to be tricky. Ninth win of the season for New Orleans. Woo.
So on the other side of the spectrum, in the other conference, is a Chiefs team that is going downhill fast. It's almost inexplicable. And then the really egregious thing yesterday was the way their defense just started unraveling, committing penalties. So at one window, their defense was good and the offense struggled. And now, at least yesterday, the offense moved the ball, but the defense was really very sloppy.
And getting really frustrated. You have cornerback Marcus Peters throwing the flag into the audience. I thought, you know, Alex Smith might look at that. That was a really darn good throw.
That's right.
That took a trip. But, you know, Alex Smith, you look at his numbers.
Yes.
They're great from yesterday. 336 yards, 4 TDs, and he's the first player with 70 yards passing and 70 yards running in the same game, which is impressive.
Yeah.
But what happens? Look at this. The rest of Kansas City combined for 42 yards on the ground. So Alex Smith, well, those are great numbers. He's this Alex Smith that we've known for the past couple years.
Okay, so 4 games into the season, we would never have said
Ever.
This. But the Chargers are the team now. Look at they have totally inverted.
What is going on in the AFC West? Someone put them in and just shook it up. Just said, let's just make this crazy.
Well, I think your Raiders or the Chargers are on their way now. Mm-hmm. It's one of those two, and it will be fun to watch down the stretch. Phillip Rivers really hitting a stride. Keenan Allen, all these
beast
things.
Beast mode trying to put the Raiders on his back and take him. It's going to be a fight to the finish.
When we come back, we'll have the He Said, She Said segment. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
It is Monday Night Football underway in Cincinnati, and we have a man on the ground, Jason Earhart. Jason, how is it developing in Cincinnati?
Well, we're inside of 5 minutes to go here in the first half. The Bengals lead this game 10-0. Randy Bullock with a 35-yard field goal. A.J. Green with a 9-yard touchdown. The big story has been a couple of injuries. We're getting an update on Joe Mixon right now. I'll get that for you here in a second. The Steelers' Ryan Shazier was taken to a local hospital for a further evaluation of a back injury. He laid motionless on the field for quite a while. We're kind of worried about what it could have been. He reached for his back, but they said he's taken to a local hospital. We'll get an update on him. The Bengals running back Joe Mixon, they're just talking about it on the speaker here as we speak. He was taken to the locker room as he suffered an injury as well. So we'll try to get an update on him, but big loss for the Bengals. Also, their starting cornerback Adam Jones out of the game. So a lot of injured players in this game so far. Bengals with a 10-0 lead and the ball, 4 minutes and 30 seconds to go, first half from Paul Brown Stadium.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks for that update. And our prayers for Ryan Shazier, a very scary injury. Mm-hmm. Bengals coming into this game 5-6, Steelers 9-2. So you would certainly think the Steelers would take care of business, but you've always worried about their consistency.
And I still worry about it. I think, I need to see a convincing win to really believe. You look at who the Steelers have, not only Big Ben, but they have Antonio Brown, Martavius Bryant, Le'Veon Bell, J.J. Smith-Schuster. This should not be an issue. Consistency should not be an issue. So what I've seen so far in this NFL season with the Steelers is they seem to play down to the level of their competition. And it's head-scratching, honestly. And for Cincinnati to lose Joe Mixon at this point is too bad. He had a great week versus the Browns last week with 114 yards and 23 carries and a touchdown. And I know he's been really wanted to be used more. And, he's out right now, too. So, it's interesting. Pittsburgh, with the top 10 offense, is really in total yardage, and then you've got Cincinnati with the top five defense. So this should be a really competitive game at 10-0. I mean, it's early. We're still not at the half yet, but I expect a lot more out of the Steelers if they're going to go far in January.
Well, and it's a must-win for Cincinnati. They come in 5-6. If they want to remain in the wild card hunt, they have to win the night at home. So we shall see. That one underway. And now we pause because we have the moment we've all been waiting for. The award-winning He Said, She Said segment.
What did you just say? What the hell?
It's time for He Said, She Said on The Boss and the Gloss.
And though I am a he and you are a she, it is not necessarily he versus she. We are looking at sports luminaries' messages across the globe and noting what they had to say this week. We're going to start with Herm Edwards. Now, Herm Edwards, in my mind, was most famous for returning that was sort of a precursor to the butt fumble. Remember, there was the Joe Passar chicane off the Larry Zonkett, hit the ground, and Herm Edwards ran it in for a touchdown. Well, Herm Edwards now has been named head coach of Arizona State football, and this was Herm Edwards talking to the press when he became head coach of the Arizona State Sun Devils.
First question, just a Coach Rubino, Devil's Digest.
Devil's Digest, huh?
Yes, sir.
Where are you located, my man?
Right here in Tempe.
Okay, Devil's Digest, okay. I'm Catholic now. I'm a Christian. Watch out, them devils. Just saying.
Well,
we're good, brother. We're
going to see devils all over the place.
I ain't taking it personal.
This is why I love Herm Edwards. Was that just the greatest? I mean, who cares that he didn't remember they were the Sun Devils? Because honestly, he's not the only one. I read this whole article this summer that Arizona State and University of Arizona feel very slighted, that nobody knows what their mascots are. The Sun Devils are Arizona State, and the Wildcats are University of Arizona, and no one knows where they are.
And now their head coach didn't know they were
and
the Sun Devils.
Not even their head coach. And God bless Herm Edwards. I, too, am Catholic. And if I heard someone saying, I'm from the Devil's Digest, I'd be like, what the what? So I thought that was hilarious. It was so Herm. And, you know, that really speaks to the identity crisis that the Arizona schools feel like they have. They do a little bit.
Well, and Devils brings its own connotation. Clearly, sure. He didn't like it. Maybe they need to, you know, there's a whole movement to change the names of sports teams for a variety of different reasons. Maybe there's a push here with Herm Edwards on board.
Well, putting a Christian Catholic coach as the head of the Devils is probably Sun Devils is probably one of the first moves to get that.
It is time. We'll see. All right, the next one we've got is the legendary coach Bill Belichick. After his Patriots demolished the Bills in an expected win, this is what we heard from Gentle Bill.
You do a great job. No, I understand. It was I'm sorry. Yeah, I apologize.
Always a favorite when we have a quote with a beep.
I think we've managed to do that every week.
Yeah, well, it's what we do best, actually. And so this one was Bull Beep. He was saying that the hit that Gronkowski did in the game, he was apologizing to Sean McVay, and he said it was a hit that really wasn't appropriate, that it was a bull beep. So
yeah, no, that was their, you know, middle of the field post-game handshake. And, you know, I love that he went ahead and just said, hey, I'm really sorry, that was bull bleep. Sean McDermott, yeah, head coach of the Bills. And just really
don't worry,
we have
the bleep button ready for you when you start railing off those expletives.
Because you know how I do that. It's just a bad habit of mine. Because that hit was exactly what is wrong with football and exactly why, as you point out, rightfully so, you really need a leader in the commissioner position to really tackle the safety issue, which is it's the most important thing in this game. And that was out of control. And for Rob Gronkowski, it was a late hit on a defenseless Tre'Davious White, you know, who had just intercepted Tom Brady's pass. He was laying on the ground and Gronk, you know, premeditated. It was specific, you know, it was not an accident. Just piled on top of him and his elbow went right into his head, knocked him to the ground. He's now in Tre'Davious White's now in the concussion protocol. And Gronk's talk afterwards in the locker room was, hey, you know, I'm really sorry. I was just really frustrated, man. You know, there's a lot of missed calls. I was really frustrated. How frustrated really are you when you're beating a team that has only scored a field goal? Can you help me with that?
No, I mean, there's no basis to say this. I mean, he's got a big lead. They're doing very, very well. They're really not up against it. But listen to what Chris has, exactly what Gronk had to say right after the game.
First off, I definitely want to apologize to number 27. I mean, I'm not in the business of that. I mean, it was a lot of frustration, and I was just really frustrated at that moment. It just happened naturally through emotions and frustration, and I just want to apologize.
Okay, actually, I'm going to give him a lot of latitude to say that he regrets that he did it.
Sure.
And actually, by all accounts, he's a good, fun-loving guy.
Sure.
Everybody loves Gronk. He's the Gronk. But that hit should never, ever happen. A hit from on a defenseless player. It was not one of those hits that just happened in the game. And here we sit. You have the commissioner of the NFL who will suspend people 4 weeks for smoking marijuana.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, the problem in the league is not marijuana smoking. The problem in the league is concussions and injuries. Mm-hmm. And this is a really great player who got a concussion because of an illegal hit. And so if you're going to suspend somebody for 4 weeks for marijuana, let's suspend Gronk for 4 weeks. I just don't see how one game suspension matches the problem.
You are so right. I love that comparison to 4 games for marijuana or PEDs, because this was senseless. It was cheap. And honestly, this is the same game that so Gronk says he was frustrated. And we saw Tom Brady on the sidelines with offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels dropping F-bombs, screaming at him. These guys need to learn how to lose. Like, really?
Right.
I mean, they play at such a level. But guess what?
In this case, they need to learn how to win, though. I mean, they were winning. That's
the amazing
thing.
This is what's hilarious. I mean, obviously, they were frustrated because Brady had missed a wide-open receiver. So, yeah, he's frustrated about himself. Gronk got intercepted on. So, you know, that's, hey, these things happen. try being some other teams, like member of the Cleveland Browns. If there was a cheap hit like that and calling out coaches like that on the sideline every time a player was frustrated, there would be, you know, many more problems in the NFL than they have. People don't want to see that. So I don't know.
Well, try being Tre'Davious White. You're playing on the losing team, and you get clobbered. Now you've got a concussion.
Right.
And knowing what we know now, knowing the problems of concussion, this is a bigger deal than a one-game suspension.
Right. And you bring up the best point of all. The Patriots won. They won by a landslide, 23-3. It was not a tough game for them. And, you know, they also reached – that allowed them to reach double-digit wins for 15 consecutive seasons. Like, really? Where's your frustration?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just – you know, yikes.
All right, we've got another quote from a sports luminary. This one from Tom Savage, quarterback of the Texans. This is actually last week. He came out for his press conference, and no one was there.
No one's here.
You good?
Okay. No
good. Great.
Yes.
Well, it was sort of quiet on there because it was quiet in the room. Tom Savage came out, and usually there's a whole bunch of reporters, and yet there was nobody there. Nobody really wanted to talk to him. In fact, the wheels have come off the whole Texan season.
That's actually a really sad little sound bite.
Yeah.
Because there was no sound. I mean, except you hear the one media woman saying, nobody's here. You know what? After seeing the Texans at Tennessee yesterday, even when Savage had a serviceable day,
sure,
and for him, a fantastic day, they cannot get it right. They absolutely cannot get it right. And just even taking the spotlight a little bit off of Savage, you look at the last drive of the game with the Texans trying to get a touchdown would win it for them because Fairbairn had already missed two field goals. Left tackle Jeff Allen on a 4th and 4, 3 consecutive offsides penalties to make it 4th and 19. I don't think I have ever seen that in my life watching the NFL, and I've been watching for, I don't want to say the many years because you'd count how old
well,
I was.
Well, to be honest, when I saw Jay Allen do that 3 times in a row, I wondered if he was concussed. I mean, that's just a wonder. Why would you – I mean, after you've made the mistake twice, you might think the one thing I will not do is start early. If I start late, so be it, but I will not start early. And yet he started early a third time.
And do you know what? Let's give him a little credit. They got the first down at 4th and 19.
Well, that was an amazing thing, and frankly,
that was amazing.
The thing about Savage is there are the little moments when he seems to do something really good, and that was an extraordinary conversion. There's not a consistency there.
Oh.
He doesn't project as a starter. It's a really tough deal. I mean, look at the Texans. They played the Titans early this year, and they stomped the Titans 57-14. And then yesterday, of course, they fell 24-13. Different team without Deshaun Watson.
Oh, the Watson effect is huge. You're right. You look at the 57 points versus yesterday, they had 13 in a loss. And, you know, the Texans are decimated by injuries. And, you know, left tackle Jeff Allen is filling in for someone. And at that left tackle spot, that is so key. It's just sad. And then they didn't have any receiving core except for DeAndre Hopkins at the end. And so you know where the ball is going. It's just a perfect storm of a mess.
Okay, so the win by the Titans takes them up to 8 wins, 4 losses on the season. They're tied for
first.
And
Texans have the inverse, 4-8.
Yeah, well, the Texans are out of this one. Yeah. In the AFC South, it's clearly going to be the Jaguars or the Titans. Who do you like?
I like Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love defense. I appreciate defense. And Jacksonville, from a couple years ago when they had like a league low number of sacks to leading the league now, what they're doing is so impressive. And what they're doing with I love this word, I keep using it, a serviceable quarterback in Blake Bortles is pretty impressive.
Well, yeah, Bortles was serviceable. I mean, he's up and down. He's developing.
He's not consistent, no.
Well, I mean, he's you know, he's a guy with a high pedigree. He was drafted early, a first rounder. There were higher expectations for him, but I think that you know, the defense will take him a little bit. Fournette will take him a while. A ways, but that's it. I mean, Jacksonville's got to feel pretty good next week. They're going to play the Texans, so that's probably a win for the Jaguars.
Yeah,
they will go to 9-4 most likely, and so they're going to be in the playoffs. I don't know if they'll win the AFC South.
But you know, they've got players like Calais Campbell that already has 12.5 sacks this season,
yep,
which is more than any player has had in the history of the franchise. I mean, it's players like that stepping up. It makes a big difference.
Yep. Very well. When we come back, we'll give you an update on Monday Night Football, where the Bengals are leading against the Steelers. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
So one of the big narratives down the stretch of the college football season, who will win the Heisman? And the three finalists are now out. We've got Bryce Love, Lamar Jackson, and Baker Mayfield, all of whom had really great seasons.
But they really did.
You know, it didn't seem like that long ago Saquon Barkley was the front runner, and he certainly petered out down the stretch.
But a small number, one running back, two quarterbacks.
Yeah, only three this year. And all along, you've been in love with Bryce Love.
I am. And, you know, I know that Mayfield's your guy, and I really do think he's going to win it. But I just...
Really? Tubbs goes with...
Are
so
you?
Among the three of us, we're three, for three different people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know Baker Mayfield's going to win it, but if you look at what Lamar Jackson has done, just number-wise, because you want to give it to the best player in the country.
Right.
I think for what he's done, I think the fact that Louisville struggled early on and they had such high expectations... It's kind of one of those that if you struggle early in the year, you can't recover from it. And I think that's what hurt Lamar Jackson. But
he's
my guy.
Okay, make your case for Bryce Love.
Well, I love it. Okay, I will. So I'm just going to give you a few quick numbers on him. So he's FBS leading 11th 100-yard games, FBS and nation leading 12 runs of over 50 yards. He only needs 47 yards to pass Christian McCaffrey for single-season rushing. And did you know he did this on one leg? He has had a horrible sprained ankle for 6 weeks, and in the Pac-12 championship game was clearly hurting and ran for 125 yards and a touchdown, studying to be a pediatrician, pre-med, and works in a stem cell lab on campus in his, quote, free time. You tell me what Baker's doing now.
Woo! Well, I salute to your case, but I do think Baker Mayfield has been the player of the year in college football. I think this is his season. I think they're all going to be great pros. I really look forward to watching them for their careers. Mayfield's been electric. Oklahoma's been outstanding. Great season. Probably the best offensive unit in the Final Four of the college football playoffs. Oklahoma's offense will make a mark.
Out of these three guys, though, who would you tell your sons? Be like him.
All right, I'll go with Love.
Okay, woo-hoo!
And we're going to have to run on that. This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Thanks for being with us.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep their trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.